This is Radio Superior 1951, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from the 1950s. This is a true story of our past, so step back with us to another time. We bring you now inside the KUWS radio studios and the Martin and McKenna Show.
This is the voice from the head of the lakes, Jack McKenna speaking. It's Thursday, March 29th, 1951. Lou Martin has the 6 o'clock news. Rapid Ray regales us with baseball spring training and Minneapolis Laker news. And Harriet has a surprise just for me. And I'm not telling what it is either.
How can it be a surprise for you if you know what it is?
Surprises don't have to be secrets.
But that's the point.
Then it's a surprise for you, since you don't know what it is.
And what's the deal with all these surprises lately?
Surprise is the spice of life.
I think that's variety.
Yeah, well, it's the spice of the Martin and McKenna Show anyway. Now the 6 o'clock news brought to you by Cronstrom's Bakery. They have assorted pineapple and strawberry jelly rolls for just 40 cents a dozen. Good evening, Lou.
Good evening, Jack, and good listeners. Three people have been found guilty in the first atomic espionage trial in the United States history. While China reacts to General MacArthur's offer to begin peace talks, we begin our World Shortwave Report from New York.
This is Stan Turner in federal court. Two men and a woman were convicted today of passing wartime atomic secrets to Russia in the first atom spy trial in the United States. The jury returned its verdict at 10 a.m. after 7 hours and 18 minutes of deliberation. The convicted defendants could receive the death penalty. They are 34-year-old electrical engineer Julius Rosenberg, his 35-year-old diminutive dark-haired wife Ethel, and radar expert 33-year-old Morton Sobel. The trio was convicted of relaying atom secrets to an international red spy ring headed by Klaus Fuchs. Fuchs was arrested in England a year ago. The government contended the secrets included drawings of the atom bomb dropped on Nagasaki, Japan in 1945. The jury of 11 men and one woman filed back into the courtroom at 9:58 a.m., a minute before federal judge Irving R. Kaufman had mounted the bench. Kaufman thanked the jurors and extended deep gratitude for their services. A fourth defendant, David Greenglass, brother of Ethel Rosenberg, confessed his part in the spy plot and testified against his relatives during the trial. Greenglass awaits his own sentencing. The espionage indictment named a fifth defendant, Anatoly Kokofiev, now believed to be in Russia. The jury was directed by Judge Kaufman to disregard the possible penalty. He did not specify that it might be death. Judge Kaufman set April 5th for sentencing. In New York, this is Stan Turner reporting.
This is Max Jordan on the front lines along the 38th parallel. Australian diggers and Canadian princess pats rolled up sizable gains today on the muddy Central Korean front, less than 2 weeks after UN forces recaptured the South Korean capital of Seoul. But elsewhere in the central and western sectors, the communists fought their stiffest defensive action in weeks. They were dug in about 4 miles south of the Red Korean border in both areas. British Commonwealth forces racked up gains in rugged country northwest of Kaepyeong. Aussie and Canadian troops forded rushing streams and scrambled over hills soggy with 3 days of rain. Kaepyeong is 12 miles south of the border and 12 miles southwest of Chuncheon on the road to Seoul. The Chinese fought their stiffest action in weeks north of Munsan on the Western Front. Firing from dug-in positions about 4 miles south of the border, they all but stopped the Allied advance. Filipino troops made small gains in one sector. The red sand came as China rejected General MacArthur's bid to talk peace with the communist commanders in Korea. A Chinese broadcast heard in Tokyo called MacArthur's peace talk bid of last Saturday impertinent, insulting, and worth only a single laugh. It said, quote, the entire Chinese people will fight unrelentingly until the aggressor is completely driven from Korea, end quote. Rumors of a big deal spread quickly along the front when it became known that U.S. 8th Army Commander Lieutenant General Matthew Ridgway had conferred separately and secretively yesterday with his corps commander. On the front line north of Seoul, this is Max Jordan.
This is AP Foreign Affairs Analyst DeWitt McKenzie in D.C. The headmen in Moscow may be rocking with belly laughs over the complaints among the democracies about the political and military conduct of the Korean War. Such dissatisfaction is worth more to the Muscovites than legions on the battlefield, yet not only may help them in the military sense, but provides propaganda for the spread of communism. Rather typical of recent criticism is that voice yesterday by Prime Minister Nehru of India in Parliament. He characterized General MacArthur's recent peace talk offer to the North Korean and Chinese Reds as, quote, an extraordinary development fraught with grave consequences. Certainly no field commander is going to lay down the policy of the government of India. Political policies are laid down by governments, not commanders in the field, end quote. Prime Minister Nehru was referring to MacArthur's recent statement that he was ready to confer with the enemy commander so political objectives of the United Nations in Korea might be accomplished without further bloodshed. One can't dismiss lightly such a statement coming from the head of an Asiatic nation of 300 million people. His views are bound to sway a host of folks. The London Daily Express sums the situation up in an editorial declaring, "It is time the hounding of MacArthur is brought to an end," unquote. The Express says the real quarrel between the general and his critics is over their proposal that he should halt at the 38th parallel. He maintains that isn't a sensible military proposition. This defense of MacArthur comes from a newspaper in a country which has been very critical of him. There has been considerable feeling there that the general is too much of a one-man band and has exceeded his prerogative. Moscow must be pleased over the Allied bickering. In Washington, this is DeWitt McKenzie.
This is Ray Tucker in the nation's capital. The actual and titular leaders of the Democratic and Republican parties, Harry S. Truman and Thomas E. Dewey, have been wooing Ike Eisenhower as a possible presidential nominee in 1952. The basis of their balcony scenes and their cries of love for their political Romeo is their belief that his organizing a European defense force and possibly preventing a Russian attack will so endear him to Americans, regardless of party, that he could walk into the White House unopposed. Oddly, but quite correctly, they do not figure that his role in World War II will be a major asset. For one thing, many of his decisions, and especially his failure to oppose top-level policy with regard to the Russians, have been proved utterly unwise by post-war developments. Furthermore, the results of that victory have not been too happy for the United States. Many Roosevelt-Truman decisions which he executed were responsible for making Moscow so strong that she is in a position to start World War III. In Washington, this is Ray Tucker.
Announced American casualties in Korea rose to 57,120 today, an increase of 1,306 since last week. The total represents casualties through March the 23rd, includes 8,511 killed, 37,918 wounded, and 10,691 missing in action. The State Department is distributing to 15 nations this week a completed American draft of the Japanese peace treaty. These nations are being invited to state their reaction and propose any changes they may want. The State Department hopes to have an agreement within 3 months. The U.S. is proposing a treaty which would end the state of war with Japan, give Japan full control over its affairs, and impose no barriers in the way of Japanese rearmament or economic development. And from Alamogordo, New Mexico, the United States Air Force shot a 1,000-pound test rocket 6 miles into the air. Officials say these tests could open a new phase of aeronautical and weather control. KUWS Radio News Time is 6:08. Jack McKenna has this message from Cronstrom's Grocery and Restaurant.
Yes, I do, Lou, and you better put a bib on because you're going to start to drool. Cherry nut bread, 35 cents. Lou's starting to drool yet. Butter fluff rolls, oh boy. A dozen for a quarter. Apple pie squares, oh mama. A dozen for just 60 cents. Assistant homemade cookies, these are for Ray too. 25 cents a dozen. Fried cinnamon rolls, 45 cents a dozen. Oh my gosh, it gets better as you go on. Date nut layer cakes, 45 cents, 55 cents, 65 cents. Take your choice, folks. Pineapple and strawberry jelly rolls for it. I'm going to quit. This is all I can stand. I'm going to go down there as soon as I can and buy some of these bakery goods. Cronstrom's Incorporated. Grocery, meats, bakery, restaurant. 1316 Belknap, just across from the courthouse, folks. You want to call for a seat? Dial 5539. Lou?
A search for a location for the Duluth Superior High Bridge is nearing its end. KUWS radio newsman Mike Simonson has that story.
Studies of locations for a proposed new high-level bridge between Superior and Duluth are being completed by engineers. Their report will be available by late April. The information was sent to City Attorney George Flynn. The letter said in part, quote, "When I last wrote Duluth City Attorney Mr. Weinberg, we planned then to ask for a meeting with the commission sometime in late February or early March. I'm writing City Engineer Tom Bastarash for some information necessary to the report that I have not been able to obtain. I trust that he will find it not too difficult to get it for us," unquote. Apparently, there's still feuding between Duluth and Superior over this high-level bridge. Lou?
By a vote of 20-12, the Senate in the state approved a bill enabling state tax beverage agents to make raids of places suspected of conducting horse race bookmaking. At present, the agents can only do so by being directed by the Attorney General. So the Senate, by a narrow margin, 16-15 vote, passed a measure giving the agents power to obtain a search warrant for a suspected gambling house. Republican State Senator Melvin Laird of Marshfield is the author of the bill. 13 Superior and Douglas County men left Superior yesterday for induction into the armed forces. An 18-year-old Marine Private First Class Elwood H. Thorson, son of Mr. and Mrs. Timmy Thorson of East Itasca Street in Superior, was promoted to his present rank when he graduated from boot camp yesterday. Thorson climaxed his recruit training by winning the sharpshooter medal on the rifle range when he fired a score of 211 out of a possible 250 during his weapons training. Thorson enlisted in the Marine Corps Reserve May the 4th, 1950. And finally, Jack, 31-year-old Morris J. Baralt began a 30-day jail sentence today after being convicted of assaulting 65-year-old Wayno Kumala, a fellow worker at the Great Northern Railroad. Baralt says, "Kumala and other workers were snoring in code, plotting to attack him, and that's what provoked him into hitting Kumala with a poker."
Snoring in code, Lou? Let's see.
Now I can sympathize with Mr. Baralt just a little more.
Lou Martin, our resident snoring decoder. Forecast for this Thursday, March 29th, 1951. Fair skies tonight with a low of 20 degrees. Tomorrow, thank goodness, it'll be sunny with a high around 35. It's music time. Here's Frank Weir and Happy Wanderer on the Martin and McKenna Show.
I love to go wandering along the mountain track. And as I go, I love to sing my knapsack on my back. I love to wander by the stream that dances in the sun. So joyously it calls to me, come join my happy song. Valerie, 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 Valerie.
Frank Weir and Happy Wanderer on station KUWS. Hey folks, Kappa's Garage presents something new on the radio Saturday afternoon. They'll be auctioning off cars. Colonel Don Mason is your auctioneer for the Kappa's Car Auction Saturday afternoon at 1:30. And here's something just as exciting. Wisconsin Central Airlines begins flying the brand new, and get this folks, the brand new DC-3 airliners out of Superior to Chicago on April 1st. How about that? That's right, the deluxe comfort, speed, and dependability for this 21-passenger DC-3. What will you think of next? The flight leaves Superior with just two-minute stops in Ironwood, Rhinelander, Stevens Point, and other big cities, Wisconsin Rapids, Madison, and Janesville, before landing in whoop-de-doo, Chicago. Phone your travel agent at 6046 and ask about Wisconsin Central Airlines' new DC-3. Lou's not paying attention, friends. I can see it. But I'm about to change that. You see, Willis Drugstore in Superior has a special. The lovable newsman won't be able to resist. Large 25-cent Hershey bars, two for just 39 cents. Lou's head just twisted around in a very scary way.
Ouch!
Don't be like Lou and hurt yourself over two large Hershey bars. Go to Willis Drugstore at 1623 North 5th Street before Lou gobbles them all up. Up next now, Lou's surprise courtesy of community editor Harriet Farig. Now this new number from the 1951 hit Parade. Here's Julie London and Cry Me a River on the Martin and McKenna Show.
You can cry me a river, cry me a river. I cried a river over you. Now you say you're sorry for being so untrue. Well, you can cry me a river, cry me a river. I cried a river over you. You drove me, nearly drove me out of my head while you never shed a tear. Remember, I remember all that you said. Told me love was too plebeian. Told me you were through with me. And now you say you love me. Well, just to prove you do, come on and cry me a river. Cry me a river. I cried a river over you. I cried a river over you. I cried a river over you.
Julie London and Cry Me a River on station KUWS.
It's my pleasure, albeit with a little trepidation, to introduce community editor Harriet Farig.
Lou's on the edge of his seat waiting for this surprise. He's been muttering to himself, wondering.
I don't mutter.
He's all a flutter.
Amidst his clutter.
Jack, you just shudder.
Or I'll hit you with my putter.
Louis, don't be grumpy. This will be fun. But speaking of putters, the Superior Women's Golf Club is extending a special invitation to newcomers in Superior to attend their initial event of the season. The ladies will have a dessert card party in the American Legion Club Rooms. Club Vice President Mrs. George Wold says guests will be allowed to choose their card games.
They don't call me Blackjack Jack for nothing.
Help! Men wanted!
Sheesh, Harriet. And in front of Lou, too.
Now, Jack, this is a plea made by Frank Mihaljevic of the Speech Department at Superior State.
Well, that's a head-scratcher.
You'll have the patience of a second grader on the last day of school.
Mr. Mihaljevic is directing the Superior Community Players. So, if you're a man and would like to act, make fast tracks over to the Superior Civic Center for the forthcoming production of The Night of January 16th. Good luck to the 25 Northern Wisconsin schools sending their pupils to the forensics competition in Hurley this weekend. Ashland, Bayfield, Drummond, Fifield, Hayward, Iron River, and Maple will join schools from Superior. The Superior coaches are Sister Margaret Mary of Cathedral, Lyle Maves and Miss Agnes Curie for Central, and Miss Jane Ritchie of East. It's time for your surprise, Louis. All Eastern Star members, Masons, and their families are invited to the old-time dance tomorrow night at the Masonic Temple on Belknap. Chairman Blanche Grant says the dance will be a parade of colorful gay cotton frocks and gaudy Western shirts. All square dance groups in the Twin Ports have been invited. We're going to have a regular hootenanny, Louis.
I don't know how to square dance.
Or polka, or waltz, or foxtrot, or jitterbug.
I, on the other hand, am quite light on my feet, old buddy, so I'll just extend a quick lesson or two.
I'm not going to do it, and that's that. So get on with the show. The sooner the better. I'll be in the newsroom.
Ooh.
I think we touched a nerve, Jack.
I think we gave the old newser a regular root canal.
I don't understand.
Welcome to Jack's world, friends. Rapid Ray is next, so on with the music, friends. Here's that young man, Johnny Mathis, and 12th of Never on the Martin and McKenna Show.
You ask how much I need you. Must I explain? I need you, oh my darling. Ask how long I'll love you, I'll tell you true. until the 12th of never, I'll still be loving you.
Mathis and 12th of Never on station KUWS. Hi, Ray.
Hiya, Jake. Boy, you know, that Lou looked really shook up.
Sure did. Harriet had a surprise for him, and he wanted nothing to do with it.
Huh?
Now, with the news from the sporting world, here's Rapid Ray Paulson.
Hello, fans of the sporting world. A string of championship fights from featherweight to jacksweight is in the works for this spring and summer. Middleweight champ Sugar Ray Robinson will face Jake LaMotta for a June return to Madison Square Garden. Heavyweight crown holder Ezzard Charles defends his title against Jersey Joe Walcott in July, while Rocky Marciano and Rex Lane could also fight in the heavyweight slot, and featherweight Willie Pep will trade blows with Sandy Sadler this summer. Those good-shooting, fast-moving Lakers of Minneapolis, driving for their second straight National Basketball Association title, entertain the Rochester Royals tonight. It's the opening game of the best-of-five semifinal series. Hockey's Boston Bruins are upsetting a lot of people these days, and now they may be upsetting Lord Stanley. The Bruins bumped off the Toronto Maple Leafs last night in the vital first game of the seven-game Stanley Cup series. Boston goalie Jack Gelinoux stopped everything, including the kitchen sink, to shut out the Leafs. And spring training is wrapping up with some rookies on a tear. 19-year-old Yankee Prize youngster Mickey Mantle is hitting at a .434 clip, while Chicago White Sox rookie Eddie McGee might steal veteran slugger Gus Zernial's job in left field. In St. Pete, New York Giants manager Leo Durocher is satisfied outfielder Bobby Thompson has shaken off his 1950 batting slump. And St. Louis Cards manager Marty Marion says catcher Joe Garagiola is swinging a hot bat, rebounding from last season's injuries. This is Rapid Ray Paulson reminding you that everyone loves a good sport. Jake?
Thanks, Ray.
So, what was Harriet's surprise for Lou anyway?
Well, that's the whole thing. It was nothing.
Well, it must have been something.
Well, she's bringing in a square dance guy. She wants to teach Lou square dance.
Oh, man, that's awful.
Awful is right. We've always known Lou can't dance.
Lou especially can't square dance. He tried it 14 years ago. They call it the Pile of 37.
The Pile of 37?
It was horrible.
Lou caused the Pile of 37?
It was a square dance at the Sons of Norway Club.
The Sons of Norway can't square dance. They're supposed to polka
or clog or something.
Well, you know, Scandinavians simply don't have the rhythm to square dance.
Especially Scandinavian newsmen.
It all started out on the wrong foot.
Yeah, so to speak.
People were bumping into each other, changing partners when they weren't supposed to be changing partners, and not changing partners when they were supposed to be changing partners. But when the do-si-do started, well, the four brave couples, including Lou, collided. Lou swung his partner, who shall remain nameless, and in a flash, there were fiddles and banjos and a double bass everywhere. They had to call the fire department to sort it all out. They used special extraction gear to untangle everyone.
Sounds like it was Lou's fault, all right.
Oh, poor fellow. He's sworn off square dancing. And now this?
This is great. Stay tuned, folks. The square dancing is next. Here's something safer. Bless Paul and Mary Ford and the Tennessee Waltz on the Martin and McKenna Mayhem Show.
I was dancing with my darling to the Tennessee Waltz when an old friend I happened to see. I introduced her to my loved ones, and while they were dancing, my friend stole my sweetheart from me.
Ford with the Tennessee Waltz on KUWS.
Jack, Lewis is in the newsroom and refuses to come out. And our guest is here and everything.
I'll be your dance partner, Harriet. We men of air can do a good jig or two.
But with those size 13s, you could do some real damage to Harriet's toes.
Good evening, Mr. Chris Carroll.
Hi, and thanks for inviting me. But you know, you can't do a square dance with just one couple.
Oh, we also have Blanche Grant, Verna Strong, and Nurse Maud Fiske. And we've corralled Engineer Joe, Ray, Jack, and Lewis.
I'm not going to do it. That's final.
What's wrong with you, man? Can't you see everyone's waiting? Now, buck up. Get out there.
You don't understand. I can't. It's too horrible.
Oh, stop your sniveling. I know all about the pile of 37.
Eesh. Wait a minute. This is Lou Martin? The Lou Martin? The Lou Martin of Pile of 37 Infamy?
One and the same.
I always thought it was just a tall tale. A legend.
You call yourself a man? Now get out there! Harriet needs you! But the radio show needs you! You can do it! You're a regular Fred Astaire. dare to dream. Catch the lightning.
Lou, 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 Lou.
I'll do it.
Okay, we have four couples. Each couple has its back to one of the four walls and is facing in to make a square. Those facing me and with their backs to me are the head couples, and the others are the side couples. The person next to you is your partner. The person on the other side is your corner. Got it?
Got it.
Bow to your partner. Here we go. Head couples lead to the right and circle to a line. Head men break and make a line, and now pass through, tag the line. Face out, you do the partner trade, and then a right and left through, you turn the girls, slide through, and an 8-chain 5. Down on the corner, out in the street, swing your corner lady round and promenade that ring. Down on the corner, out in the street, Willie and the poor boys are playing, bring a nickel, tap your feet. Side couples lead to the right and circle through a rhyme. Side men break and make a line, and now pass through, tag the line, all face out, do the partner trade, and then a right and left three, turn the girl, slide through, and an 8-chain 5. Down on the corner, out in the street, swing the corner lady round, promenade that ring. Down on the corner, out in the street, Willie and the poor boys are playing, bring a nickel, tap your feet. Okay, 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 stop the music.
Stop the music. Somebody could get a broken neck here.
They're going to call this the pile of 51.
Someone call the fire department.
What? We'll be on fire, too.
You all right, Lou?
Yes, Louis. Are you okay?
I'm okay. In fact, I'm not too bad. Thanks to Jack's two left feet. People might forget the pile of 37. I can get on with my life.
Oh, Louis, I'm so relieved.
Relieved isn't the word I want to use right now.
We'll be back same time, same place on your radio dial. The good Lord willing, that is. And the firemen get here soon. For Lou Martin, Ray, Harriet, and the gang, this is Jack McKenna wishing one and all a good night.
Say, Blanche, what say you and I head downtown for a little entertainment? I hear the Minocqua Valley Hoedowners are playing at the VFW. They have a barn dance every Thursday night.
I'll call ahead and warn them you're coming.
That sounds like fun. How about it, Maud?
They might not let you in, Jake.
But it says here, admission 50 cents, everybody welcome.
Well, check the fine print, big boy. It probably says, everybody welcome, except Irish jiggers with size 13 shoes.
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1951, an original production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Harriet Fahrig is played by Jennifer Simonson. Other performances by Duke Skorich, Don Hansen, John Munson, Joy Laporte. All events reported on Radio Superior 1951 are actual accounts from the Superior Evening Telegram. This is your announcer, Mark Snow, speaking. Good night.